Ready. Five tribes. Welcome back, people, to another episode of Vibes and Tribes with me, your host, Baze, Bio, B Diddy, whatever you want to call me. We here, we back. And today, guys, I know I say it each and every week, but each and every week is true. We got a juicy episode for you. This one is to all the film lovers, all the music producers, all the creatives, all the artists. If any of those words that I said out there, you know, resonate with you, then please, guys, yeah, make sure you listen to this one. And before I introduce our guest, make sure you like, subscribe, share, watch, talk about it. And just make this thing go global, because we're about to go international. But with that, Charles, do you want to introduce yourself, my bro?
Yeah, my name's Charles Abaro. I'm an assistant director. Yeah, it's me.
Jeez! Assistant director in the building. To those listeners who have listened to a few episodes, you know this used to be a travel podcast. So just a little icebreaker, Charles. When you go on holiday, or let's say you're going on set, mm-hmm. What's the first thing you pack, my bro?
Ooh, when I go on holiday. Do you know what? I get a towel.
A towel? Yeah,
it's a towel.
Much needed.
You know what? I know there are towels in the hotel that you stay in and that, but yeah. It's just the thought of like rubbing my body with something else that someone else has used. It's like, nah, I can't do it.
Rotted.
I gotta get
that. Takes a lot of that takes a lot of space in the suitcase,
yeah,
as well.
It does, but I gotta make that sacrifice.
It's worth it, yeah?
Yeah, I have to. It's boom. Just a thought. It's in my head.
There you go. I love it. But with that, as we like to do on this podcast, let's take it way back. So you mentioned the fact that you're an assistant director. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, let's start with secondary school. So yeah, where did you go for secondary school?
Oh, this is way back.
Yeah, that's how we do.
So like, I went to secondary school in Wood Green, a place called St. Thomas More.
Yeah.
If you're watching and you know about St. Thomas More, you know how bad of a school that place was.
Oh, well, damn.
It's probably fixed up now. I think it has fixed up now. Okay. But when I was going there, it was like a proper menaces running around.
Really?
I'm not gonna lie, I was probably one of those menaces. I got through it, you know what I mean? It was secondary school. Not all secondary schools are great, but we got through it.
And you know, you mentioned that you were a little bit of a menace. Did you enjoy secondary school? Was it a good experience?
I had fun with the people I met there. I'm still in contact with a lot of people there, but these days, nah, I think I could have had a much better time somewhere else, I think. Somewhere closer to home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, nice. And in terms of the academics, how did you find it at that school? Obviously, yeah, with the potential issues that you're talking about.
In the academic side, I mean, I definitely wasted my potential, I think. I think okay. I could have been a lot better in school.
Okay.
But it's one of those things, you're growing up and you just want to have fun, really. So like, I didn't take school as serious as I should have, but yeah, it could have been better, but yeah, got through it.
I really appreciate the honesty there. Yeah. And I suppose with that, when you're in secondary school, did you have an inkling of what you wanted to get into? Did that come later?
Honestly, I didn't have any idea what okay. I wanted to do. Obviously, I had like very African parents,
yeah.
So it was either lawyer or doctor, and obviously I was fighting towards that. But obviously, when I couldn't get towards that, it was like, okay, what am I doing here?
Mm.
So just play around and all that stuff. But yeah, had no idea.
No idea. And did you end up going to sixth form or college?
I went to college.
You went to college, yeah. And what did you do? What did you do in college?
I did media studies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that was a lot. I think that's the moment I realized that, you know, I want to do something camera based, like anything with a camera, anything with like a production kind of feel towards it. Put someone in front of a camera, have a narrative, even if it's like lights, all that kind of stuff, sound, all that stuff. I wanted to be involved, and that I think college was the point I realized, yeah, that's what I want to do.
So would you say from college versus secondary school, you started to potentially take school more seriously in college?
I would definitely say that, yeah, because what happened was I had this little camcorder that I would travel around with, and I would just film things all over the place.
Mm.
And then one of my friends said that I should come and film one of his events. He was like a DJ.
Yeah.
And I went there and I filmed it and I edited it, and it came out looking great. And I was like, I can do this.
Mm.
This is like, I might as well start now. And yeah. This was in college.
Okay.
So like my first year of college, I was doing that. And I just kept on getting more money. The more money I got, I'd invest it into like my equipment, and then I'd get more cameras, and then yeah, just kept on growing from there.
So I really like that. There's so many things I want to unpack there. In terms of that first camcorder, what made you want to get that? Was it a present? How did you end up with that first camera?
My dad had the camera. Yeah, it was his little holiday camera that he used to go on, because he used to travel way before I did, and he would go around with his camcorder, and then I was like, I do like the look of it. It's quite like, this is like 2003.
Yeah, yeah, early days.
Yeah, and it was like, it was quite a spiffy looking camera, and I was like, I want to see how that moves and how that works and how it goes, and I just took it out with me like all the time and just filmed whatever I could.
Nice. And you know, you mentioned the fact that you filmed your friend's event and you edited it. For somebody who's, you know, just getting into the industry, maybe hasn't even taken media studies, like, how did you know how to edit? Like, what software was there? Did you have to do research? How did that process come about?
I self-taught myself.
Okay.
And what you'll find is any computer you have comes with an editing suite already installed on it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of people know this, but on a Windows computer, it comes with Movie Maker.
Okay.
On a MacBook, it comes with iMovie.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
And you can literally help yourself, teach yourself. Obviously, those are like the most basic softwares that you can use to edit, but the more you do it, as I was going on, I would get more and more advanced.
Yeah.
And after I had a MacBook, so after iMovie, I went on to Premiere Pro. And Premiere Pro, I used Final Cut, I used all kinds of software that was like really advanced.
Damn.
Yeah.
And in terms of like we're jumping ahead, but I like it. In terms of like that early creative process, so let's say you film an event, how long does it take to cut and dice and make that video?
I would always give myself a little breathing room. So if I filmed an event, I would tell the person that I filmed it for, I'll get this to you in like 2 weeks.
Okay, even though
I could do it in a week.
Okay.
It's just because I was really lazy back then.
No, I get that. Yeah. I get that. And that's fine. Thank you for being honest. But I need to learn, because obviously this podcast, you know, we're trying to go global. I'm editing this podcast at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose the question is, did you have a process, or like, did you, like for me, when I'm editing this podcast, I listen to it,
mm-hmm.
I pause it, and then you almost have to listen to it like how many times?
Yeah.
In order to edit it, like, I suppose, what would your advice be for anybody? What's the hack?
What I would do straight away is I would put it, every single clip, into the bin, which is in the software, and I would watch everything. I just let it roll. Even if I'm not looking at it, I can hear it. And I'd be glancing at it. And then once it gets to the end, I would render it, which would give it, rendering is like, it makes everything run smoother.
Okay.
And then I would watch it again, and then I would add the sound, and then with the sound, that's you listening to it again. But with the sound, what you find is you have to match it to the video. So because I recorded sound, it was a lot clearer with the video, and I'd get rid of the video sound and add the sound that I recorded, and then I'd be ready. Because after that, at that point, I realized, you know what, I've watched this so much, I know exactly what I want. So then I just cut and remove anything that I didn't want, put it all together, and it always came out looking good.
Damn. I thought he was gonna give me some easy method, but I guess there's a lot I gotta do.
Practice.
Okay, that's sick, bro. So going back to your college education, right? So you finished with your media studies, and what's your plan? Is it to kind of do film at university? Is your plan to go to university with African parents? Is it to go into the working world? Yeah. What was your plan?
I think university, like I said, with African parents, it's like, it has to be done.
Yeah.
Like, I had to go to uni. So I wanted to do media. And a lot of the schools that I could go to, the universities I could go to, didn't have like the main course I wanted to do, but I had to find something. So what I did was I went to Hertfordshire and I studied digital media implementation.
Oh wow, that sounds techy.
It's basically a long way of saying code.
Oh wow, okay.
And this involved a lot of like sitting at a computer writing a lot of coded messages,
okay,
just to make like a balloon move around. And it was honestly boring.
Okay.
It was very, very boring. And I used to do that a lot. I did that for a whole year. And then at the end of the year, I was like, I can't do this. Like, I can't go next year, spend more money doing this course that I'm not enjoying. So I got out of uni. I took a gap year, but I was still working. What was happening was I was getting a lot of work from since college,
because
I was doing weddings, I was doing interviews, I was working for different companies as well.
You were building out your portfolio.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel like uni was like purposeful.
Yeah.
But then after that gap year, I went back to uni.
Okay.
I went to Sussex University.
Okay.
They had a little branch in Croydon, and I was doing digital film production.
Oh, okay, great.
So it was the production part that got me. So from then I was just like behind the camera editing a lot more. And yeah, it was a better course for me for what I wanted in the end.
Yeah. And do you feel like with that second course and the production, it's helped in what you do today?
Yeah, absolutely. I think even though I was in the classroom thinking to myself, I know I'm quite advanced here. I know quite a bit more, not to toot my own horn, but I felt like I knew a bit more than even the teachers.
Yeah.
I felt like there's no way that I could be doing it too much, because practice makes perfect, like I said before. And even doing like the films that we were shooting in uni, it was practice. And it just kind of polished my craft, really.
And I'm just going to jump ahead a little bit. When it comes to getting production gigs for shows, films, whatever, you know, typically when you look at traditional, you know, I'm an analyst, you know, you need your 2-1, this, that and the other. In the film industry, does the degree carry weight, or would you say it's more based on your personal skills and your portfolio from all the work that you've done?
Honestly, I think it doesn't. If I could go back, I wouldn't have gone to uni.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think uni helped. I've done a lot of stuff, and not once has anyone asked me what I did in university.
Wow.
Yeah.
No CV handed, no nothing.
Nah, it's all about who you know, what you know, and your ability now. So if I was, if I wanted to go in a job tomorrow, they wouldn't ask me what I did in university. But for my first job, they didn't ask me what I did for university.
Yeah.
It was just about this person said, oh, Charles is going to be good for this. You should get him in. And I came in the next day. They looked at me. They interviewed me. They were like, oh, yeah, he's a really good person. Yeah, let's get him on. And then that was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
So word of advice to anybody looking to go to university to potentially get a degree to work in film and TV. Just save yourself 40k. Yeah. Save yourself 120 grand.
Listen, I don't want all the African parents getting onto me. Basically, I'm just saying, it's not the end of the road if you don't go to university.
And that's the reason for this podcast, right? Yeah, because you know, you're a living testament that maybe you don't necessarily need to go. Because like you said, that's 3 years.
Yeah.
That's 3 years worth of work.
I could have been working.
That's 3 years of savings that could have gone to a house. Like, and that's the reason for this podcast, right? Is to shine a light and let people come to an informed decision. So by all means, go to uni. But especially now with the increased fees, you know, you need to listen to podcasts like this really to get an understanding as to the harsh realities of, you know, whether it's really needed. But with that being said, and before we move on, what I will say about university is it's more than just the university degree. I think there is there is a growth process there. So for me, when I went to university, yes, I got a degree, but it was more about becoming a man and learning to do things for myself, like learn to cook bolognese, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's an experience, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you gotta go through all that so that it prepares you for the real world in that kind of sense, yeah.
There's some listeners who will know, there's some people, I'm not gonna name names, but they know who they are. They didn't know how to iron their shirt before they went uni.
Man.
They didn't know how to iron their shirt. He knows who he is. He's been on the podcast. But yeah, with that, so you mentioned you had a lot of work ongoing whilst you were studying. So it sounded like you were pretty committed to it. What kind of jobs were you doing whilst you were studying?
I was working with Darren Rahman for SBTV.
Okay.
I did a job with him as well on Rewind magazine.
Mm-hmm.
We were shooting like music videos for like Cozzy and Deneo.
Oh, sick.
Still up. No way. We did my first touch of being on production was with Labyrinth.
Wow.
We did a SBTV shoot. And this was in like 2012. Mm. And then I did stuff with like Samuel Ennie for Ennie Views. I did stuff with Mr. Beezy.
Yeah.
Followed him around schools. And he would like talk to the kids and like, you know, motivational speakings. And then, yeah, I'll just follow with my camera.
That's sick. Yeah. And I suppose for all the people you've just mentioned, you know, you mentioned that a lot of times you were recommended like, oh, Charles would be good. You go for your interview.
Yeah.
How did you get that first job, how did it come about?
So this one's funny actually. My first, Darren Rahman got me onto his job because he walked into my dad's GP practice.
Oh wow.
And yeah, he was just like, oh, my dad always likes making conversation with him. He'd be like, what do you do? And he'd be like, oh, I'm a filmographer, I'm a cameraman. And then my dad was like, oh, my son, he does a lot of production stuff. I didn't do anything.
Kind of but he blew.
But yeah, he was just like selling me. And then he gave me his contacts. I messaged him on Instagram. And then I was like, oh, I didn't tell him that. I got his message from my dad. I was just like, oh, I'd love to come and help with anything you've got.
Mm.
And then he had like a little, in Leytonstone, he had like a little office where they would edit all their stuff. And I went in there just one day. And just watched him edit, and then he was like, oh, I've got this music video with Cozzy, another music video with English, you can tag along. I wasn't getting paid for it, but it was just going there and seeing the experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a key takeaway. So people talk about, oh my god, like this person's probably so lucky, they, you know, they probably got here by chance. But just listening to you there, like, yes, he did meet your dad at the GP,
yeah,
but you've gone off your own back to message him on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone to his offices in Leyton and you've just watched him free of charge.
Yeah.
So you've invested and done that for free. And was it similar with Mr. Beezy and others? Were they paying you, or it was like maybe just expenses, but you weren't really getting money in?
I think I used that experience with Darren to know what to do.
Mm.
And then I took my camera, like I said before, and then I went out and then I kind of mimicked what he did when I was with him. And then it helped my confidence because no one could turn around and say, what are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I was just doing what Darren did when I was with him the other day.
Yeah.
And then he's like a proper big SBTV cameraman. So I used that to help myself grow. And then, Mr. Beezy, Samuel Ennie, they all paid me for my work because I like to think they liked
what you were doing. Yeah,
exactly.
That's good, man. Mm-hmm. And I suppose, you know, for people starting out, understanding their value, when you did start eventually charging,
mm-hmm,
how did you know how to price yourself? And what would be your advice for people getting into it? Not to get bumped,
mm-hmm,
but to make sure you're getting an honest pay for an honest day's work.
Well, what I did was I would do research. So I went to like, I went on Google. Google's been around for ages. I'd just be like, what is the basic salary for a camera person for one day? Da 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 da.
Okay.
And it would tell me like, even when I filmed weddings, I was filming weddings, and they were saying for one day, you've got to do from £1,000 to £800. That's like the minimum
beginning
any filmographer that's doing weddings. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. But I always filmed weddings for like people I knew.
Exactly.
So what I had to do was I had to scale it down a bit. Mm. So like I could guarantee the next wedding.
Yeah. I mean? But the thing is, what I would say with that is, you say that it's like £800 to £1,000 for a day's work. But to your point, it takes 2 weeks. I know, like my brother's wedding, it took 3 months to get the footage back.
Oh, really?
So it's like, is it a day's work? Because when it comes to editing it and putting everything together with the pictures,
it's true.
It's long.
Yeah.
So this has been great so far. I think my next question is, when it comes to actually filming, whether it be SBTV, following somebody around, you know, here in this podcast studio, we've got 3 cameras set up. How many cameras are you setting up on a shoot, or back then did you just start with one and now as you've moved on it's more cameras, like you said, as you've developed?
Yeah, so
like how does that all work?
Yeah, I loved getting cameras. I just loved as many cameras as I could get. I could see the cameras here, they're really good quality.
Okay, like
I started out with that Panasonic little mini camcorder, but then I had to retire it after the work started getting a bit more.
Yeah.
So when I was like with Samuel Ennie, for example, I would have like the main camera stationed in front, and this was like my big Blackmagic camera.
Okay.
And then on the sides, I'll have like my Canon 7D and my Canon 5D.
Okay.
And they would catch the angles of the people that are involved. So okay. If it was me and you here, one camera would be aiming at you, and then that camera will be aiming at me, and then there'll be a main camera, which is exactly the setup. That's it.
Okay, great. Yeah. And for people who, let's say they might be helping out, starting a podcast, maybe they want to, you know, get into production, what would you say the entry cost is for, let's say, camera number one first?
Camera number one. I can talk Canon, because Canon is my favorite make in terms of cameras.
Mm.
And that could get you, you can get a good Canon camera, well, from about £300.
Okay.
Yeah. So like, with that money, you could start up with just one camera. You don't have to do it an advanced setup like we have here, but you can start with one camera and shoot multiple angles. Just have to pause in between, depending on what you're filming, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
And when you have a setup like this, I actually don't know. So it's great. Look, I'm learning. Everybody's learning on the pod. When you've got a setup like this, with multiple camera angles, how does it all, how do you piece it all together? Do you like layer it on top?
Yeah,
like
exactly that. So you've got to match it. When you put it all inside the software, you've got to match it to the audio. So my trick is, this is my little tip, what I used to do back in the day.
This is what we like.
I would put the sound first.
Yeah.
And then I would put all the videos matching to the sound. And then that way it all runs off together. And I'll put each camera on top of each other.
Okay.
So I could, and then once I've put each camera on top of each other, I could mask each camera one at a time just to see that they all match together.
Yeah.
And then I can take away, I'll link the 3 shots up, and then I can cut in between. It always worked out, and it was a lot quicker that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
So link the sound first.
Yeah.
And then put the cameras one on top of each other.
Mm-hmm. On top of the sound.
On top of the sound. And then you said mute the angles that aren't being watched.
Yeah, you can mask them.
Mask
the camera angles that you don't want to see.
Okay.
And then you can just cut in between.
This is, my mind is blown. And sorry, because I'm going to talk from my own experience once again. I'll tell you something that, like when I'm using iMovie, which you've mentioned,
mm-hmm.
The storage, it always goes.
Yeah, that's
why is the storage? You know,
that was my main reason that I had to keep moving. I had to move on to Premiere Pro. So yeah,
what? Because there's more storage.
Well, not because there's more storage, just because it helps you navigate a way to have more storage.
Okay.
Yeah. Whereas on Premiere Pro, I use Pinnacle as well, and Movie Maker, Pinnacle, and the other one. It was just like, okay, I have no storage. What do I do?
I got a hard drive, but even that, it's annoying.
Yeah, it's long. It is long sometimes, but yeah.
So, and we're jumping forward a little bit now, but to where you're at now, with all of the software you've got, does a standard MacBook work, or do you have some techie one with like infinite memory? Like, because you need a lot of memory, right?
Right now, I'm assistant directing, so I don't have to worry too much about filming. So
okay.
I'm like on the floor now, making sure things are happening with like casting, all the production, all the crew, that stuff. Yeah.
And that leads me nicely. So, you know, we've spoken about you started at events. We've spoken about SBTV, mm-hmm. And following my brother around, Mr. Beasy. Sorry. After, you know, you've been in the industry a few years at that point. Obviously, you knew you wanted to be a cameraman, but did you know what the long-term goal was? Mm-hmm. And has that changed?
Yeah, it did. When I was doing it for a few years, I was filming a lot. I was getting quite a lot of money. I was happy. I thought, you know what? I feel like I can be a bit more creative than this. I do want to do my own kind of thing, but your own kind of thing, it does cost a lot of money.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, if you want to get people in, you want to hire people in, you want to thank them for their efforts, for helping you out, you have to get some kind of income. So what I did was I wanted to jump into the TV industry.
Yeah.
And I thought that way I'll be able to get money and at the same time look at a bigger production that I'll probably get into one day.
Okay.
And so I joined a group called Creative Access.
Okay.
They help a lot of like the minority, the people, black people, Asian people. They help you get into the industry, get your foot into the industry.
Amazing.
Yeah, and then
we'll link that in the show notes. Yeah, is it still around now?
They are still around, yeah.
Amazing Creative.
Creative Access.
Creative Access. Yeah. Bloody, I'm not listening. Creative Access. I'm going to link that. Yeah, Creative Access in the show.
They're really good. I'm still in their group as well.
Okay.
There's a lady called Josie. Basically, what happened was when I they have like list of jobs on their websites, from sound mixers to cameramen, camera trainees. I wanted to be an AD, assistant director, so that I can get closer to the director to see how I can end up directing my own things.
Okay.
And I was always like putting myself out there for these jobs, and I did get passed on for a lot of jobs. I didn't get a lot of jobs that I looked for.
You gotta be real. That's fine though.
But the thing about Creative Access is they'll help you out. So one day I got an email from Josie, who's the head of Creative Access, and she was like, oh, Charles, you didn't get this job, but I've put you forward for this other job.
Amazing.
And I think that you'd be great for it. And that's how I got my first job in Leeds. It was on a TV show called National Treasure.
Okay.
I was the personal PA to Robbie Coltrane.
Okay.
And I would just follow him around because he wasn't quite a very mobile person. He just walked around with his cane. I just made sure he had his cane with him. I made sure he had his barber chair, which was like this huge, big chair. And I think that's why they hired me, because I was like the only one on the crew that could carry. I literally just followed him around with this chair.
Yeah.
But it was good because whenever he finished, I would finish.
So yeah.
He didn't stay all day on a shoot.
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
For like, you filmed for like four months.
Wow. Yeah. So you was with him for 4 months?
Yeah.
So,
Leeds. Yeah.
So, and you two, well, you must be tight. So if you saw Robbie, you'd be like, hey, Robbie, yeah, my guy. I
mean, yeah, he died recently.
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
But he was always really, really like fun to be around on.
Yeah. Set.
Like he was, it was always fun. It was always a fun day. You never knew what to expect of that guy, but he was a really nice guy.
And I think, you know, just based on what you've just said there, right, like, yes, you wanted to become an assistant director, but the first job you've ended up doing has nothing to do with it. You're a PA. So when they say get your foot in the door, this is a real world example of getting your foot in the door. You're a PA. You did whatever it took to get your foot in the door. And then following that, so you've done that for 4 months. What happens next? Then what do you kind of move into?
Because I'm in Leeds. I'm making £80 a day. This is not.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And I'm spending all that money on my Airbnb.
Mad.
So like, I'm thinking, I'm not getting any money out of this. So what I've got to do is, I've got to network my ass off here. I've got to talk to everyone. I've got to be friends with everybody. just so that they can remember me at the end of the job. So the producers and this very nice lady, the production manager, she was the person that I connected with the most. And she helped me get my next job in London.
Sick.
Basically, once National Treasure finished, I went back to London, and like it wasn't even like a month, it was like a few weeks later, she messaged me and said, oh, I need a, I'm still not as assistant director.
Yeah, of course.
But she said, I need a stand-in for this job called Gorilla. And a stand-in is basically once the cast are on set, they've shot their bit, and the director calls cut. The actor would walk off, go back to their green room or whatever and chill. The stand-in, which is me, would come in and stand in their place so that the DOP or the...
Make sure they got the shots from all the angles.
Exactly, so that they can light it up and make it look good so that when they call the cast in next time, they're ready to shoot.
Yeah.
The cast isn't standing around, waiting around.
Yeah, so that was
me for a good 5 months.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. But what happened was I was doing a lot of running as well.
So yeah.
This was my route into ADing.
Yeah.
So as I was a stand-in, I would help around with the other PAs and just do what I could to help the third AD. And that's how I got my foot in the door for AD. And then literally that was the last time I was a stand-in or anything. Every job after that was AD.
Okay, that's sick. Before we go into ADing, I just need to take it back a little bit, because if we go back to the creative access, come on, shout out Josie. You said that you got passed on a lot of things. Was there ever a point where you were like, damn, this might be too hard to crack this industry?
I mean, yeah, there was a part of me that obviously lost a bit of, you know, this probably isn't going to happen. But I didn't, because I was so busy, I was still working. I was like doing my own things, filming weddings, filming interviews, filming music videos.
Yeah.
I didn't really like mind too much, but I can understand how that would frustrate other people. I probably thought, you know, there are probably people more frustrated than me.
Okay.
And, but I should be grateful because I'm still working on what I want to do.
Yeah. So I suppose, to anybody listening to this who might have had some knockbacks, I suppose the advice would be, number one is obviously to keep going.
Yeah.
But number two is to continue building the pipeline on the side, et cetera, et cetera. So before we get into AD, I want to talk about the portfolio, right? So obviously you've worked on a lot of stuff. You know, I was talking to you before this about your LinkedIn and all the shows you've been on.
Yeah. Need to update that.
Yes, it really does. In terms of like a website, so I know like with UX designers, with other creatives, typically they have a website where they say, I've done this, this and that. Is that something you've needed? Is it something that you have, or is that kind of like a nice to have?
I think it's nice to have. I know a lot of like makeup artists and like people who work in the industry, cameramen, who have websites, but I've never had time to do a website.
Okay.
So I'm happy to use what's already out there for me, as like IMDb, LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I'm able to put all my stuff on there. You just need to make sure that, you know, you can keep it updated. But I don't think as an AD, I don't really need to have like a website or anything like that. But
okay,
it would help.
It would help.
I just need time to do it.
Yeah, okay. AD. So before we get into it, you mentioned there's a third AD, so then I was assuming there's a second AD, and then director.
Yeah. It's quite funny, really, because there's so many branches leading out of these ADs. So, yeah, you'd think of it like a floor runner.
Yeah.
Who's just like a PA.
Yeah.
They're an AD. Then you've got the third AD. Then you've got the second AD.
Yeah.
Then you've got the first AD.
And what do all the different ADs do?
So the floor runners are the ones that are like running around, grabbing teas for people, making sure people know where they're going, grabbing casts from this point and putting them in this point. And the third AD is the person that tells the crew a lot of what's going on.
Okay.
Has the call sheets, has the sides, gives it out to crew, steps in for the first, when the first isn't able to do anything, like the first has stepped off, you know, maybe for an emergency or something,
yeah,
the third AD will step in and like take control of the floor.
Okay.
The second AD is at base. So they are where the cast will get ready.
Okay.
And they are just making sure everything is happening. All the gears are turning. Everything is happening at base. Costume and makeup know what's going on. Production know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also writing the call sheet for the next day, the next week, really.
Okay.
Yeah, and the first AD is always next to the director.
Okay.
So the first AD will be like, the director wants this. So the first AD will get on his radio and tell the third AD, let's get this here, let's get this here. But the thing is, like I said, there are many branches.
Mm.
So as a third AD, you've got crowd third, you've got crowd second, you've got crowd ADs, crowd PAs. So like the third AD has a lot to look after and make sure that everyone's on their toes.
Yeah.
Everything's running.
Yeah.
And the first AD, if there's any issues that the first AD wants, he'll talk to the third, and then the third will talk to everyone else.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot to take in. There's a lot of people on the payroll. So, is it, does it go like you have to be a runner to become third AD? You have to be third AD to do second. You have to do second to do first. It's literally like, it's like a hierarchy and you've got to work your way through.
Yeah, I haven't seen any kind of shortcut for it. Like, I've never seen someone just
unless
walk
like
in
your like parents like fund the film or something like that.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
but yeah, you've got to start. It's always you've got to start as a floor runner. I don't see anyone jumping in and becoming a third AD or a second AD or a first AD straight off the bat. You've got to make your way up that ladder.
Okay, I've got so many questions. First of all, what's the difference between an AD and a producer? Because on a lot of shows, this exec producer, that exec producer, and they're the ones who look like they sit in the chair and they do the cut.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
When I started, I didn't think, I might get myself in trouble. I didn't think producers did anything.
I don't think people think they do anything. I can say it. Maybe not you. I can say it.
We would like be at the monitors watching the scene take place, and the producer would be sitting there like right next to me, and we're watching, and then they'll be like, "Oh, can you get me a coffee?" And as a floor runner, I'd be like, "Yeah, of course," and then I'll just be thinking to myself, "What is this person doing?"
Like,
but they are the producers. It's in their name. Like, they talk to the higher ups. Like, if I was working on an Apple TV show or a Netflix TV show, they are the point of contact where they ask Apple TV or Netflix, we need this, or we need like this amount of days to get this done, we need more money to get this location in order to shoot this scene that is important to the show. They make it happen.
Okay.
Basically, it's all very behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
But the producers are so integral, like so important, and like they are very like, you've got to be very on your game to be a producer.
Are they like people?
Yeah. You've got to be like very kind, friendly, someone that you can talk to. Yeah.
See, I watched the morning show.
Yeah.
So the producers like Greg in that. But that's like another level, isn't it? Mm-hmm. News producing.
Yeah, news is, I think, a lot different because it's fast flowing.
Yeah.
You've got to keep going.
Okay, that's good. So it's nice that you've mentioned like you thought producers didn't do anything. This is a difficult question. Have you ever worked with bad ADs or have you had a bad experience as an AD?
Yeah.
And what has been the consequence of either the person or the experience, I suppose?
I think...
if you're allowed to say.
I can say. Yeah. It's, I think if you're... The thing about this job is, if you're not good, people will say you're not good.
Mm.
If you're not good, people won't hire you.
Yeah.
So my first few jobs, they were like, well, I just started in the industry. No one taught me anything what to do. And I had a third AD that would always tell me I couldn't sit down. But granted, we start at like 5 a.m. and we go all the way to 6 p.m. And that's when we wrap. It's not when we finish. It's like we wrap at 6 p.m. and then we got to like pack down, get everyone back to base, and then head back to base ourselves.
Mad.
Pack down there. So we're leaving essentially at like 7 o'clock. We've been on our feet for 12 hours, and literally I had to sit down. I have to sit down because being on my feet for 12 hours, that's why I've got like a bad ankle now. But every time this third AD would tell me, Charles, you're not allowed to sit down. Don't sit down. Stop sitting down. And I'm like, I have to listen to him.
Yeah.
But I always thought to myself, this is a ridiculous way of working.
Yeah.
You're going to, because if I end up hurting myself, you're just going to replace me.
Exactly.
I'm not going
to. My goodness.
It was like, Charles, I'm sorry that you injured your foot. Who else can we get in? Like, it was always like that.
So, and then you don't get paid, right? Because there's no sick pay.
Because I'm not. Yeah, no. Not when you're starting out as a floor runner. They'll just get rid of you.
Are you and all the work that you've done, is it freelance or is it part of a company?
It's freelance.
It is all freelance,
it's all
right?
Word of mouth. So like, they'll be like, "Oh, Charles is free. Let's get Charles in. Charles is a good AD." So yeah, it was like that for like 5 years. Well, since 2016. And yeah.
Mad.
It is the work rate is
high. And I was gonna say, just touching on what you said, what are the hours like? So you mentioned you've done stuff for 4 months, you've mentioned you've done stuff for 5 months, and every day is 5 a.m. till 6 p.m.
So it varies. So like, there are a lot of factors to take into account. So like, if locations aren't available until certain times, you have to come in at this certain time. Like, it could be anywhere from 5 a.m. start to a 6 a.m. start, to a 7 a.m. start. You could do night shoots.
Yeah.
And night shoots would start around like 3 p.m. so that you get there in time for the second it gets dark.
So that
you can get all the maximum amount of time of darkness as you can.
And
the days are split into three different categories, which is continuous working day, which is no lunch breaks. a semi-continuous working day.
What does semi-continuous mean?
You got half an hour for lunch, and then a standard working day, which is 12 hours, you get 1 hour for lunch.
Okay.
So, but the thing is, continuous working days sounds like chaos, like mad. But the thing is, you end earlier on a continuous working day.
Okay.
If you just keep going, no lunch break, you end a bit earlier. But standard working day, which is 12 hours, you get 1 hour lunch. Yeah, that's great, but it's still like 12 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas a continuous working day is like 10 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. Oh my God. We need to set up a union. A union for all the ADs and runners to get them some support. No, I'm joking. Let me not get you in trouble, because you actually love your job, right?
Yeah, I do.
So that leads me nicely into, okay, so you start getting into TV. What has been, what's been your funnest experience? And then that will lead me nicely into number two, what has been your most rewarding experience?
My funnest experience. You know what? My funnest experience was on Top Boy.
Jeez. Summer Heights.
on season one, there was a club scene.
Yeah.
I say season one, it's really like season three.
Yeah.
But the first season on Netflix, there was a club scene, and it was my first time. Like, well, I stepped up. It was like my from floor runner, not into like thirding, but just like in between.
Yeah.
Because the third had to go off and do something else. So I went to the club, and I had to be in charge of like a lot of these people who are their essays, their supporting actors.
Yeah.
And and they would be like in the club acting like they're dancing. And it was fun for me because I was in the DJ booth with the DJ, and I would be grabbing the microphone and I'd just be like shouting orders to all the people. Because the first AD is talking to me in my earpiece,
but he
can't get the word out to all these people.
So I
just had to be there and just echo whatever he told me.
Mm.
And it was fun because we had a little bit of fun with it.
Yeah, of course.
We played some music, played some grime music. I'd shout, you know, inside. Like it was so fun. Like, that was one of my funniest experiences.
Nice. And you mentioned Top Boy. Obviously, it's had a lot of seasons. A few questions I have just on Top Boy, and then we'll talk about other things.
Yeah.
One, so Drake obviously is the producer or owner.
He's the executive producer.
So what does that mean? Because he ain't sitting next to you behind the monitor talking to the higher ups. What does it mean?
He you know, I only met him once, but he,
that's one more than me, bro. No, actually I've met him, but
he literally they have a lot of say in the production. So like, not only him, but Ashley Waters, Kane Robinson, they're exec producers.
But they're like working now.
Yeah. Which is why they have such a big say in what goes on.
Kane Robinson, Kano, by the way, just in case, you know, for people who didn't know.
I call him Kane.
Yeah.
They have a lot of say in what goes on. Ashley and Kano have a lot of say because they obviously they're like number one and two cast on the show. Drake is the one that brought the show back, so I guess he's able to say.
Is
that.
He like financing it, or is he part of like a team who finances it?
I think it's called Spring Hill Company, I believe. So it's not only him; it's like LeBron James and
okay.
So like they've got that company, and they used it to resurrect Top Boy because it was dead in the water on Channel 4.
It was,
and they brought it back with that company. So that's how they're able to attach themselves as executive producers.
Okay, so, and then my follow-up question is, so obviously you did like Summer Heights season one, they're going into the final season now, season four. Like, is it nervy, like when it comes to season two, like, are they going to call me back? Did you work each of the seasons? How does it work?
I did, they finished the last season in October,
okay.
November. I did one day on the newest season that's coming out. It's not because they didn't call me back, it's because I turned it down because I was working on another job.
Okay.
But the thing is, if you're a good crew member, if you did great, they will always show loyalty to you.
Okay,
like
great.
Give you like the first right of refusal.
Yeah.
And that way they'll be able to be like, oh, if we can't get this person, then we'll get someone else, but we've got to ask them first because of the loyalty, like they helped us on the last season.
And then I get that. And then with every season, let's just say, or with every job, how do you make the progression from runner to AD3 to AD2? Like, is it just someone says, I'm going to take a chance on you? How does it work, bro?
It's like, it is a factor of all those things. Like, I was a floor runner for quite a while, and then I did a job called Ted Lasso.
Yeah, oh my god, that's bloody sick.
Yeah,
Jason Sudeikis, yeah, and then man,
that's actually one of my favorite jobs.
Yeah,
I did season one, and after season one, the first AD and the third AD turned to me and they were like, "This is on the last day." They were like, "Charles, you can't floor run it anymore. You're too good for it." Like. And I always took that into consideration. I was like, wow, they believe in me. So like, yeah, shout out Alex Berrick and Dan Parslow. They literally said, you can't be floor running anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to move on. You've got to move to third. And then since then I thirded.
Okay.
Like I did a few instances of floor running because you can't just get out of it.
Yeah.
I did like dailies, and then the next job I did was third AD, the next contracted job.
Mate,
yeah.
And the grind never stops, right?
The grind doesn't stop.
So, we're not even wrapping up. There's so much to unpack here. So you've done Ted Lasso, you've done Top Boy.
Yeah.
So do you predominantly do TV? Do you do films?
I do films.
What's more enjoyable and why?
So I like TV.
Or what's more difficult? But sorry, go on.
I like TV because it's fast paced.
Okay.
Whereas film. It is very, very slow.
Meaning?
Just because we're in like this big studio.
Yeah. You don't need to say the film if you don't want to out yourself.
Well, I did a Disney show, okay. A Disney film.
Okay.
And this is a big, huge scale Disney film.
Yeah.
And this was like the biggest production I've ever been on.
Yeah.
But the thing is, when they ask for a piece of equipment, they're like, oh, we want to do a crane shot. And I'm thinking to myself, oh, crane shot, that's easy. I've got to wait for them to bring the crane in because it's the biggest crane I've ever seen in my life. And it will take a good 20, 25 minutes to get this crane in. So while they're getting that crane in, we're all just standing by, just waiting for, you know, this crane to get in, camera to set up, standing to step in, lighting on that stand in, and then they'll call the cast in. It was like, it was a long time and it was just very slow for me. Whereas on TV, things are very much lower scale. So, like, if they call the crane in, the crane's quick, literally right there.
Yeah, they'll bring it in,
do it, and it was very quick.
Because it's production cost, isn't it? Yeah, it's all about cutting it down. So, how long is a film contract versus a TV contract? Because a TV has lots of episodes, right?
Yeah,
that's my first question.
So, like, Top Boy, I'll give it like this. Top Boy, if there's 8 episodes, that's about 6 months
of
filming.
Okay.
Whereas a film, that film that I did, was a year. I was on it for a year.
Wow.
But I didn't even stay until the end. It was like a year and a couple months.
Okay.
But I jumped off because my work was done there, but I went on to the next TV show. But yeah, I think film is a lot longer. Well, depending on the production scale,
yeah,
it can be a lot longer than TV, really.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. My next question, bro, there's too many. Okay, yeah. So this was one. When you go from show to show, like for me, every year I'm trying to get an increase in my salary, right? Because I've got more experience, I've got more this, more that.
Yeah.
With every show, film, whatever you do, to anybody looking once again to get that value, like, are you Googling before every shoot? Right. Like, are you speaking to other people who are in your job title? How are you making sure that you're getting the right pay for every job?
If you're on a job where it's you know the people that you're working with,
yeah,
you can. It's very important to like message them and be like, okay, they just sent me my deal memo. How much are you getting paid? This is how much they're paying me, especially if you're on the same role.
Okay. They would never let us do that at work, by the way. They're like, don't talk about your salary, whatever you do.
Honestly, it's like you've got to make sure that, one, they're being fair,
yeah,
and two, they're keeping up with the regulations. So like we've got like things in place like Bechtu that tell people this is how much you're supposed to pay these people.
Oh, okay.
On a drama.
Okay.
Especially if you're doing this amount of time, especially if it's at this level. So you've got to make sure that it all lines up.
Okay.
And if it doesn't, then you're like, you go back to the production manager and be like, excuse me, it's, I think we should be paid a bit more. And then no one's going to say, well, we're not going to pay you that much more.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, no, that never happens.
It never happens.
So you're dealing with reasonable people.
Yeah. Honestly.
Because once again, I think, you know, from what you see in TV and whatever, the sense you get from the TV industry is that it's very cutthroat and it's not very collaborative and that they could leave you high and dry. I don't know if that's true.
I think you have to remember you're getting brought into these jobs by people that know you.
Yeah.
So much time it's the first AD.
Yeah.
And the first AD has quite a high authority.
Okay.
So he'll be like, okay, I brought you on the job. Welcome. Make sure they give you the right amount of money.
Yeah.
And then you'll go and do it. And then if you don't like it and they're arguing with it, you can just go back to the first and be like, listen,
this ain't right.
Yeah, it's not right. I don't wanna, I've got other jobs that I turned down for this, really.
Mm.
I'd rather get paid what I feel like I'm valued.
Mm-hmm.
And the first AD will be like, if it's a good first AD, they'll be like, leave it with me. If the production literally can't do anything about it, the first AD will come and tell you, this is the most they can pay you.
Yeah.
Whether or not you can do it or not, it's up to you. I feel no way about if you want to do something else.
Yeah.
That's how it usually goes.
And you mentioned that you didn't work on the final season of Top Boy because you had other work.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody who potentially has, you know, multiple offers and needs to make a decision, how do you come to the decision, okay, I'm not going to do the final season of Top Boy, I've got to do something else? Is it because of the money? Is it because you're doing AD2 versus AD3? I don't know if you're allowed to say, but
it was, no, I can say, I can. Okay. It was, you know, it was, as you can see, I'm a big football fan.
Yeah.
So the job I was doing was Ted Lasso season
3. Okay.
So it was like Top Boy season 3 or Ted Lasso season 3.
Okay.
And, I think what happened was Ted Lasso started before Top Boy.
Okay.
So I always thought to myself, I'm going to jump off of Ted Lasso halfway through and join Top Boy.
Yeah.
And then do that job. But because I was already on Ted Lasso, I've gotten close to these people.
Yeah.
I've just gone to the Emirates Stadium. I've gone to that.
Oh, did
I've
you?
Gone to Manchester. I've gone to all these stadiums.
Yeah.
And I just thought to myself, I can't leave this job. Like, I like it too much.
So do you know what happened? This might be a silly question, but because do you know what happens, or do they film it in like random orders and then they piece it together?
Well, as a third AD, you get given the scripts way before everything. So
wow.
Yeah. But yeah, you get like episode one, and then you'll read everything that happens, and then you know what happens way before.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mate. Okay, that makes sense. So, your advice to people, I suppose, who have to choose between jobs.
I would say, do what you feel is. It sounds cliche, but do what you feel you're more comfortable with. If you want to test yourself, like jump off a job and then go to. Well, if you want to jump off of a job and go into like waters you don't know about and you want to test yourself, by all means do that. But if you've got multiple offers, do what you feel is right. Do what you feel is you know, what you're going to get more out of.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. A few more questions as we come to the end. This has been great. I hope that people get a lot of value from this. You better, because I have. You mentioned that you still use Creative Access. Mm-hmm. Is that to find jobs still? Is it just as a network? Is it a bit of both?
Well, to be honest, I haven't used Creative Access since they got me in the door, because everything has been word of mouth.
Yeah, but yeah, yeah.
I am still in the
community,
the community, the WhatsApp groups. Josie still emails me a lot of stuff from time to time. It is like a lot of, I think they consider me as like alumni, so
yeah,
they
invite
me to stuff. She does like big me up a lot on like Instagram posts, like, Charles Abraham, I'm so proud of what he's doing. There's a lot of things coming out that I think they're going to be proud of as well. So it is. I do love being part of Creative Access. There's like loads of people in that WhatsApp group, and
do you think about giving back a lot and honestly, giving advice? Is it something that you do?
My regret is that they've had a lot of like workshops where they invite alumni over to talk to like younger people coming into the industry, because of the work rate of everything, it's so hard to like go in. But I have made a point to, whenever I see it, I will try, but it's just been really difficult.
Okay. And then final couple of questions. So you said that you got your first job in 2012, so that means we're in year number 11, right? Quick maths. You're an AD3 at the moment. Do you see a pathway to AD2 anytime soon? And then AD1, like, what do the next 5, 10, 15 years look like for Charles Abraham?
I think I am currently third AD stamped. Floor's second is what I want to step into, which is like the second AD that is on the floor. But I have been doing a lot of firsting.
Oh.
So I've been getting experience in that degree.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll learn how to schedule because that's what a first AD does. They've got to schedule everything. They've got to make sure we've got a plan for the whole shoot.
Is that using software?
Yeah, they've got, I've forgotten the name of the software, but they...
Monday?
Monday.
Yeah. Monday.com.
I think it takes a long time. So like, if we started shooting March 1st, they would be on the job from February 1st.
Just
to like make sure they started scheduling and make sure we know what we're doing once all the crew join onto the job.
And in terms of like training, getting that experience, obviously I know from what you've said, you know, you've shadowed, you've done this, you've done that. Is there any like official accreditations that you can do that can potentially push you along?
There are a lot of like workshops that people put up that can help you, like first AD workshops, second AD workshops, not even just like for those, like camera department workshops. There are a lot of things that are out there that will help you learn more about it. It's just about making time for those. I do want to do one. It's just, like I said, the time. But as soon as I learn how to schedule, then I think first ADing is very, very clear path for me.
That's great. And what is the dream role?
I want to direct. Yeah, I think all this downtime I've got, I am currently writing a few things.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so... There are a lot of things in the works that I want to like see on screen one day.
If you want to take a chance on a young up and coming actor from London stroke Essex. Look no further, by the way, just saying that. Caught him on camera, caught him in 4K.
I need all the help I can get when it starts happening.
If you need support, is it SA, supporting actor? Yeah,
supporting actor.
Bro, I'll actually back
you. Even like main acting roles, I need those.
Bro.
Yeah, man, I got you.
Don't mess around.
I got you, bro.
You got me. Listen,
we go way back. We so do. No, bro, don't worry. I got you, man.
All right, so if the podcast goes on pause again, you know it's because I'm exploring my career as a top boy in the film industry. But no, Charles, this has been great, man.
Yeah, man,
thank you so much for the time today. I suppose just before we let you go, you've mentioned Creative Access. Are there any other useful websites, links, tips you want to share with people who are aspiring to get their foot in the door in the film industry or currently there, but, you know, want to further their education?
I think LinkedIn is a good one.
Okay.
And also, if you are aspiring to jump into the industry, it's about who you know, like I said before. So, like, even if you, like, message, you know me, now you see me, you know what I do, like, message me and then you can, like, be like, oh, I'd love to get into the industry. I can point you in the right direction. Because I know, like, a lot of different departments.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to be in camera, I can point you towards a camera trainee who runs a great workshop.
Yeah.
Samara. She does, like, camera trainee workshops. Or I could give you, like, costume makeup departments. Mm. They do a lot of stuff. They can get you in. But, you know, there are courses that you have to take before you jump in, especially with, like, electrical departments. Departments that cause risk, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are avenues in. You just need to know who to talk to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And look, we've got Charles now. And with that, do you have any socials you want to share? You can keep yourself MIA. You don't have to share, but, you know, you've mentioned LinkedIn. I don't know if you want to share anything.
What shows?
Where can people find you?
Oh, yeah, no. Instagram, Charles Exobaro. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
if you hit me up on there, I'll always, like, read the message.
He's taking a lot of cool videos of when he's on site and doing his thing. But yeah, guys, you know, thank you for those who've gotten to this point in the episode. As I always say, guys, if you have, please make sure you like, subscribe, comment, share at @vibesandtribes_. My journey into becoming a Hollywood actor has just started today with this conversation. I'm going to hit Charles up after this. But no, Charles, thank you so much.
No problem, man. Loved it.
Yeah, it's been Baze, it's been Charles, it's been Vibes and Tribes. Over and out.